And so just to welcome you, those of you in the room, those who are watching online, we are in this series called Breathing Room. And just to catch you up really quick, if this is your first time or if you've missed, for some of you, you have a bedroom or a closet or a backseat of your car that looks like this. How many of you would say that's kind of me? So yeah, okay, very few, and you're just like, what's the problem? I know where everything, I know where that sock is, whatever. And what we said through this series is it's okay for your room, your closet, your back seat, whatever it is, your house to look like this, but it's not okay for your life to look this way, or for your finances, as we talked about last week, where there's just no margin, there's no room, and there's chaos, and there's no room for error. And we don't want your relationships to look like this either. So we're talking about creating breathing room. And we define breathing room as a space between our current pace and our limits. So our pace, how fast we're going, how fast we're spending, how much we're spending, and the complexity of our relationships and how complex they've gotten, our current pace and our ultimate limits, because we all have limits relationally, financially, in terms of our time, we all have limits. And when there's no space between your pace and between your limits, there's no breathing room. And when there's no breathing room, what there's more stress, there's more anxiety, there's more tension. You get hyper-focused on two or three things, and you end up ignoring other things that are important or even more important. And unfortunately, you do that long enough, and then you end up having regret. And we don't want that, because when there's no breathing room with our schedule, with our finances, relationships always take a hit. Relationships always suffer. It's like, you know, mom or dad or honey, I feel like you're always on your phone, or you're always on your laptop, or you're always this, your face is in a screen. I feel like you're physically here, but you're not here. You're actually somebody else. You know, your body's here, but your brain is not. And you don't have to be a Christian person, or maybe you're trying to figure this out. But believe it or not, the ancient book that we refer to every single week, which we call the Bible, which some would say is not relevant, we're going to discover today is actually very, very incredibly relevant and speaks to this. In fact, when God had an opportunity to create his first society, the nation of Israel, they had no rules, they had no laws, because for centuries they were a slave state. They had another country, another nation dictating for them what their life was to be and all their values and all they were to do. And so he gives them 600 rules, because again, it's starting from scratch. So he gives them 600 rules, over 600 commandments. Most of us are familiar, can maybe name one or two of the top 10, the 10 commandments. And in these top 10 rules, one of them was he commanded them to take a day off. And so a really good question is, how could he not love a God that commands you take a day off? God said, I've designed you to function best when there is space to breathe. And so when the sun goes down on day 6, you are to drop everything. You are to stop working. You don't harvest another grape. You don't harvest another grain. Another olive. When the sun goes down on day 6, you just go home, and for 24 hours, you just rest. You just rest. Because I have designed you, I've created you to function with breathing room, that life is better with breathing room. So today we're going to talk specifically about your time and your schedule, because my inclination and your inclination is to cram everything in and take nothing out. Our inclination is to cram everything in and take nothing out, and just to do so much. And then what ends up happening is we get to where there's just a lot of what we're doing, or even all of it. We just get to where we're really not enjoying much of what we do. And evidence of this would be, as far as that you're dealing with this tension, is if you find yourself regularly saying or texting while you're driving, hey, I'm going to be a little bit late. Or, hey, I might need to leave a few minutes early. Honey, I'll be at your recital, I'll be at your event, you know, but when exactly do you perform? Because, you know, I kind of want to show up, I want to stand in the back, I want to watch, you know, my child perform, and so that way I can go home and say, man, you did such a great job. No, I didn't stay for the other 42 kids whose names I didn't know and music I didn't like, or whatever it is, or son, you know, when exactly do you take the floor, whenever, you know, what time does the game start? You know, I might be a few minutes late, and you drive too fast, and you just eat in the car, and it's just go, go, go. And then you find yourself, you're at work, and you're thinking about, you know what, you're thinking about home, and you're at home, and you're thinking, I need to be working. I mean, your kids are going 10 different directions. You know, or some of you grew up with this. You grew up in a family like this. You grew up with parents like this, or you're single, and you struggle to say no to anything. And you just fill up your schedule. You don't say no. Anybody ask you to do something or suggest something, it's like, yes. And then, you turn around, it's like, why did I commit to this? Why did I say yes to this? But you don't back out because you're afraid of how others might react or that you might miss out on something or whatever it is, and you just cram your life so full of stuff. And so today we're going to talk about how to solve this. And the good news is if this is not happening to you, we're all very excited for you. But this is going to be how to prevent this from happening because this is our culture. And eventually you're going to face this temptation and it just happens little by little. And so there's a lot of ways we could approach this. We could do a time management seminar, which we're not. We could talk about calendars. We could talk about pacing. There's a lot of things that we can do. But the way we're going to approach this today is we're going to have a one big idea with one application. So we're just going to try it really, really simple. And I know you're going to think I'm exaggerating because I say this a lot, but I'm telling you, if you apply this morning's application, it will literally change your life because it will change your time, and your time is your life. And to an extent, you know this because if you change your time, time is your life. As your time goes, so goes your life. And as your schedule goes, so goes your life. And to an extent, you know this to be true. So if you have a Bible, you have a Bible app, and you want to follow along, I recommend downloading the YouVersion Bible app if you don't have it. It's free. But we're going to be in Psalm 90. And for most of you, if you have any familiarity with the Psalms, you think of David. But this psalm is actually a psalm of Moses. A lot of people don't know that. But this is a psalm written by Moses. And here's why we should pay attention to Moses. Here's why we should take him seriously. Because Moses lived to be 120 years old. And that is old. That's really, really old. So it's like 120 years old. Moses was a Hebrew. He was a baby. He was raised in Pharaoh's house. He was adopted. He was raised as an Egyptian. So the first part of his life, he has the life of royalty. He's got everything he could possibly want. He has it made in the shade. Then he falls out of favor with Pharaoh's family because he murders an Egyptian to defend a Hebrew. So it lets Pharaoh and the Egyptians know his loyalty is not with them. And so he has to run for his life. And then he spends the next 40 years of his life. He's a shepherd, he's a husband, he's a father, but he lives as a shepherd. And so now you're talking about some really, really slow days. Like, you get the sheep, you lead them out of the pen, you take them out the field, you watch the sun go across the sky, you gather them together, take them back to the pen, go to bed, next day, same thing. And so you're talking about slow days. And then 40 years as a shepherd, and here's the important thing to understand, is Moses did not understand his own story. See, we're on the other side of it, like Moses. You think Moses, if you know anything about the story, even if you're not sure about all the miracles or whatever, you still like, okay, Moses did not know his own story. 40 years a shepherd, and he's thinking, you know what, this is it. You know, my kids know my name, my grandkids will know my name, but then after that, nobody is going to even remember my name. And then the third part of his life, and again, you know this, he ends up back in Egypt, and let my people go, and there's plagues, and a river of blood, and signs and wonders, and pestilence, and all these, and he's God's mouthpiece, and he's in the epicenter of one of the biggest world events in history, and he leads this entire people group out. He faces down Pharaoh. The fourth part of his life, he's now the leader of a nation. They're marching out of Egypt to literally God knows where, to the land of Canaan, the promised land. And now he's the leader, and people are murmuring, and they're complaining. And it's God says, you know what, I'm so sick of them. So Moses, for the rest of your life, you're going to lead these people around in circles for about 40 years until they all die. Okay, they don't get to go in. Their kids, the next generation gets to go in, but they do not get to go in. It's like, all right, well, this is awesome. And then at the end of his life, he gets to the edge of the promised land, and so now he's got all these complaining people that he's had to deal with for so long, but now all of them are dead. They get to the edge of the promised land, and God says, oh, by the way, because of this decision that you made in the past, you do not get to go in. You get to go up on the mountain. I'm going to let you look in and see it, but you do not get to go in. It's like, what are you talking about? And so this man has some perspective on time. And so in the 90th Psalm, he gives us perspective. And as we're going to see, it actually is the context for every decision that we make as it relates to time. And again, you don't have to be a Christian or a religious person to get this. But I hope that as a result of what we're going to talk about today, wherever you are, that this will make you want to read your Bible because it is amazing. So in this little snippet, there's this insight about time that's huge because, again, it establishes the context for every decision that we make and specifically what we cram in and what we pull out. Now, this is ancient text. It's Hebrew to English, so it's a little rough. It's a little tricky. I'm going to read it and then try to explain it to you. If you're reading along, it's Psalm 90. Then at the end, he's going to get to this powerful punchline. And so here's how it goes. Lord, You have been our dwelling place throughout all generations. And so he's talking about the nation of Israel and how they have lived within the context of God's plan for them and of who he is. He continues, before the mountains were born, or before you brought forth the whole world, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. It's kind of like an arrow pointing this way, an arrow pointing this way. It's like from that point to that, wherever that ends, you know, that is you. From everlasting to everlasting, you are God. And so God, somewhere between the bookends of those two things, so somewhere in this sliver is me, is us, is this nation of Israel. You know, just like pause and here we are. And then he makes this incredible statement. You turn people back to dust, saying, return to dust, you mortals. It's like something out of Lord of the Rings, you know, Gandalf, you know, you shall not pass, return to dust. So this is a little offensive to us in our modern Western way of thinking, but this wasn't offensive to Moses. This is his way of saying God controls, to some extent, he controls the beginning and the end, and he has input into our daily lives. And see, you and I, we'll struggle with this. Well, does that mean God kills people? Well, I don't know. Does that mean God knows how many days people are going to live, or he decides? I don't know. That's not the point. What's important is that for most of you, whether you recognize it or not, most of us believe that God, whoever he is, whatever he looks like, that he has some control over the length of our days, something the length of our lives, and I can prove it. Because if you found out tomorrow that you or someone that you loved had a terminal illness, you would pray. Like God, I haven't talked to you in a long time. I don't know how to do this or whatever, but, you know, I'm dealing with this or this person I love. You would pray. And if you'd pray, then there's something in you from your childhood or something, you know, way back, something you picked up or learned along the way, or maybe even now, that believes that somehow God has something to do with the days and the number of the days of your life. He continues. He says, 1,000 years in your sight are like a day that has just gone by, or like a watch in the night, which would have been about 3 to 4 hours. In other words, this is Moses' way of saying, man, imagine how time flies for God. You know, for you, for me, for him, it's like, you know, here comes a year, here comes another year, and we're looking to it. And then we experience like, oh my gosh, you know, where'd the last 10 years go? But for God, for you, 1,000 years is like 3 hours, which means, you know, God, my whole life, which for me is just such a big deal, how my life must look to you when 1,000 years is like 3 hours. And then he says, yet you sweep people away in the sleep of death. They are like the new grass of the morning. So it's like, you know, a little boy is born, a little girl is born. It's like so exciting. It's like they've got their whole life ahead of them. They're like the new grass of the morning. In the morning it springs up new, but by evening it is dry and withered and dies. God says, you know, our long years, 70, 80, Moses got 120, our entire lives that we get so amped up and worked up about, you know, God, you know, from God, from your perspective, it's like grass that pops up in the morning and by noon, by late afternoon, it's dead. I mean, isn't this exciting and motivating? Aren't you glad you came this morning? So he goes on, our days may come to 70 years or 80 if our strength endures, yet the best of them are but trouble and sorrow. Moses is going, you know, I went from royalty to 40 years of keeping sheep, and then I've got this thing, you know, and this, you know, let my people go, and this great thing, and my life kind of turns around, and then I get right to the edge of the Holy Land, and God's like, no, you can't go in. It's like, Moses, how can you even believe, you know, there's a good God? Moses is going, listen, don't lose faith just because you're dwarfed by the magnitude of God or the brevity of life. He's talking about years, for they quickly pass away and we fly away. And so here's his point, that time in life passes quickly. Time and life pass quickly. He continues, and then this is a confusing verse. Again, it's Hebrew to English, so I'll read it and then explain it. If only we knew the power of your anger. In other words, if we could just understand or embrace or comprehend or get our arms around your anger, your wrath is great as the fear that is your due. Your wrath is as great as the fear that is your due. And again, this is a difficult verse to translate from the Hebrew to English, so it loses something. So here's the idea. If we could see God as he is, we would give him the reverence he is due. If we could see God how he is, God, Moses is saying, if we could somehow see God as he is, when it comes to time in our lives, when it comes, we would give him the reverence that he is due, because we just have this tiny, tiny little itty bitty sliver of time to do something with that we've been given. And wouldn't it be the rational, the logical, the correct thing to somehow take this little itty bitty blip of an existence and give glory to God for it, because he's the one that gave it to me, to give the glory he's due. Here's another way to read it. If we could see God as he is, we would be more careful with the time we've been allotted. That if we saw God as God is and realized that he gave us allotted time and an allotted life, you know, we're here today, gone tomorrow, we're like grass, we would probably rethink what we do with this limited gift, this limited time that we've been given. See, but we don't think this way. You know, in 2018, USA, Western society, and he comes to the application. He says, teach us, because we don't do this naturally, teach us to number our days. Teach us to live as if our days are numbered. Because isn't this true? We live each day as if we're going to live forever. We just do. We just fill up our schedules and times and go at this pace, and we don't think about it. We spend our time as if we have all the time in the world. We spend our time as if we're going to have all the freedoms that singleness brings in the world. That we're always going to have our health, that we're always going to have our kids, that we're always going to have our parents, that we're always going to have each other, that we spend our time as if we're always going to have this job or have this level of income. We spend our time as if our time is unlimited, but we know it's not. But in terms of how we schedule and how we cram things into our day and our time and how we prioritize, we live as if our days are not numbered. And Moses says, don't do that. It is a mistake. You need to learn to number your days, which means to live as if your days are numbered. Now, you know what it is to do this, because you've done this in other areas of your life. If you've ever had a presentation coming up or an exam, anytime you were given a deadline, an exam date, you knew your days were numbered, because you had a deadline, and you knew eventually time and opportunity would run out. There was going to be a point where you no longer had any more time to prepare for whatever was coming up, and there were some of you, especially, you know, high school or in college, you did not live as if those days were numbers. And then suddenly it involved large amounts of caffeine and Red Bull, or the mix of the two. And you usually regretted then not living as if your days were numbered leading up to that. And then you did really poorly and had to have a talk with your parents that were paying for school. And you had to number those days as well, like, how long can I put this off? Or if you're a woman and if you are married or have ever been married, you did this because you had a wedding day. And from the time that you knew that you were going to be married, you began to number those days. You knew exactly how many days that you had between the day that you said, I will, and I do. And you knew exactly everything that needed to happen between that time. You lived as if the days were numbered. Or if you've ever done taxes, which may not be a good one because you can file for an extension. If you've ever been pregnant, no extensions on that. Okay, so you're going to have a baby. You know within a certain window of time, a small human is going to literally drop into your life, and so you got to prepare. So you live as if your days were numbered. So Moses says, what if you lived your life that way? And then here's the promise. He says, teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Teach us to live as if our days are numbered, because if we live as if our days are numbered, then we will gain wisdom as to what we should put in, what we should put out, and what should be the priority. If you live as if your days are not numbered, you just continue to fill your days with things, and that later on you will wish you did not fill your days with. But when you begin to number your days, as we're going to see in a minute, you immediately gain wisdom and perspective. It's like, wait a minute, I cannot spend any more time doing that. I need to spend more time doing this. I need to spend no time doing this other thing, and you gain wisdom. Here's kind of a summary statement for everything that Moses just taught us. Remembering that our time is limited provides us with wisdom to know how to spend our limited time. My time is limited, so I need to limit how I spend my time. My time is limited, so I need to limit how I spend my time. When it comes to time, we forget that my time is limited. Now, I know I keep repeating myself, and you're starting to want to know when this is going to be done. So I'm going to do you a huge favor. I'm going to fast forward you to the end of your life, and you're going to immediately gain wisdom that you normally would not get until you are actually at the end of your life. And if you will take that wisdom and bring it back to the current stage that you are in life and apply it, it will change everything. Bronnie Ware is an Australian nurse. And Bronnie works in hospice, and she's done so for many years. She has spent all these years with time, specifically with people that have about 12 weeks or less to live. She started to ask a lot of questions of these people. She's written about this. She does TED Talks. They're awesome. She asked her patients, "Do you have any regrets? What are your regrets?" She began to hear this pattern. She began to write these things down. So to help you fast forward and give you some incredibly valuable perspective, I'm going to share with you the top two regrets that people have within the last few days, and in some cases, the last few hours of their life. And I'm going to give you the second one first. The second one is the one you might think is the top one. And here's what they say. I wish I hadn't worked so hard. I wish I hadn't worked so hard. And it's like, that's really not too surprising. I wish I hadn't worked so hard. Now, I'm going to read a statement that she makes about this insight, and here's what she said. This came from every male patient that I nursed. Every single man at the end said, I wished I had not worked so hard. They missed their children's youth and their partner's companionship. Women also spoke of this regret, but as most were from an older generation, many of the female patients had not been the breadwinners. All of the men deeply regretted spending so much of their lives on the treadmill of the work existence. And I have just fast-forwarded you to the end of your life. You know what this means? It means that men and women, but especially men, it means that if we don't learn to number our days, we will misspend our life. If we don't learn to number our days, we will misspend our time, and we will experience avoidable regret. Because when you think you have all the time in the world with somebody you love, with your kids, with your spouse, with your family, whoever it is, when you think you have all the time in the world, and then you suddenly realize you don't have all the time in the world, you can't go back. It's too late. You only get to be 20 once. You only get to be 30 once. You only get to be 40 a couple of times. You can be 50 indefinitely. See, these are stages of life. The number one most common regret. And again, if you're a teenager or a college, you know, you're in your 20s, you got to tune into this. I wish I had the courage to live a life true to myself and not the life that others expected of me. I wish I'd had the courage to live true to myself and not the life other people or culture expected of me. And she explains, this is the most common regret of all. When people realize that their life is almost over and they look back clearly on it, it's easy to see how many dreams have gone unfulfilled. Most people have not honored even half of their dreams and had to die knowing that it was due to the choices they had made or not made. And again, this part is so powerful. Health brings a freedom very few realize until they no longer have it. Health brings a freedom that very few realize until they no longer have it. And again, I've just done you a favor. I have fast-forwarded you to the end. You now have the wisdom that comes with living as if your days are numbered. So what do you do with that? What do you do with that if you take those and make those the lenses as you look at your schedule and how you spend your time through the week, on the weekend? What do you do with that if you have those lenses on as you look at the pace of your life and the space between the pace and your limits? And I know your pushback, because I'm no different than you. I'm very type A, want to go 100 miles an hour. The pushback, the first one is, you know what, Chad, if I don't do as much as I possibly can, I'll never make it. Well, what's it? Have you defined it? I don't know, but I won't make it. You know, do you know what the people that Bronnie spends time with, what they would say, you know what, you better make sure you choose the right it. Because once you spend your whole life trying to make it, and then you get to the end and you realize you chased after the wrong it, you had better know what it is and where that whatever it is that drives you towards it, where does that come from? Maybe for some of you, it was from your parents. Maybe they were very successful and, you know, you're a little bit intimidated and you feel like you've got to measure up and that's what drives you. Or maybe they were a train wreck. And it's like, no, I don't want my life to be like that. So what drives me is that. Or maybe they were just, man, they were just so in the middle. It's like, I don't want to be that. You can never win with parents. So it's just like somewhere along the way, we decide what it is and then we work to go after it. We're chasing after it. We're planning our days towards the pursuit of it. And sometimes we don't even understand what it is because we haven't taken the time to define it. Here's another pushback. If I don't do as much as I possibly can, I'll fall behind. Well, fall behind who? Fall behind what? What drives your schedule? Is it the culture? You know, well, if I don't want my kids to fall behind. I don't want us to fall behind. I don't want to fall behind. You know, I want to keep up. Well, keep up with who? Fall behind what? You should have an answer to that question if it's going to drive your schedule. God teaches us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Here's another one. If I don't do as much as I possibly can, I'll be poor. And for some of you, you know, not a lot of you, but for some of you, this is a big deal. Well, have you ever stopped to define, well, what's poor? And again, what's driving that? Maybe it's something you grew up with or something you've seen. I don't know, but it's something in you. Like, I don't want to be poor. And you've never really thought it through. And it's an emotion that we talked about last week that drives you financially towards something. Here's another one. If I don't do as much as I possibly can, I won't be accepted. Now, isn't it amazing, especially those of us who have moved well past high school and college. And this is fresh on my mind because my wife and I got into this whole thing in our basement yesterday, going through stuff. And I actually threw away some yearbooks. And he's like, oh, you should never do that. No, like, I didn't like half those people. I don't remember any of their names. And see, here's the thing. You know, we moved past high school and college, and for those of us that have moved well past that, it's like the people whose opinions and thoughts of us that were so important to us, it's like 5 years later, we don't even know them. 10 years later, we don't even remember their names. And you see, like when you're a teen, you're in college, it's like all of these people that drive us to spend and waste our time and waste our life. And if you're in that age group, just trust me, within a few years, you're barely going to remember their names. And they will rob you of what's most important to you, and it's your time, because your time is your most valuable asset. The last one, if I don't do as much as I possibly can, I won't measure up. Well, again, measure up to what? Measure up to who? What or who's driving you? Because if you don't sit and think through and answer some of these fundamental questions, you could easily and far too quickly get to a stage and age of life where you begin to lose your health, and then suddenly you don't have the options that you have now. And you'll spend your whole life chasing something that you never even defined. And if you're a Christian, if you're a Jesus follower, if you believe there's a personal God that has a personal plan for your life, you'll miss it. You'll miss it. This is extraordinarily important because God wants to do something not just in you, but through you. And if you're not careful, you'll miss it. Because people would determine for you what needs to be in your schedule and what should be out. They will determine your priorities. God has something for you. He has something for your family, for your kids. God has something specifically for you while you're single, when you have this time where you have extra decision power and margin and control, and you're filling up your life. And it's being stolen from you, from people who are saying, this is how you should live your life. God's going, no, no, no. Live as if your days are numbered, because if you do that, you will gain wisdom, a heart of wisdom. It will give you breathing room, and life is better. Life is more joyful. Life is less stressful. Life is more peaceful, more rich with breathing room. And I just want you to know that I'm deeply, deeply passionate about this. In fact, a couple weeks ago, I actually asked Shauna, for me, it was a really, really scary question because I wasn't sure I wanted to hear the answer. Husbands, you know anything about that? But I knew that I'd be speaking on this, and so I asked her. I said, "Honey, in our time together, we've been together for almost 30 years now. In our time together, do you feel that I put you and our family first when it came to time and prioritization and all that. And I was afraid of the answer, but without missing a beat, she said, yes, I do. I'm like, whew. Okay, I can preach on it. So it was very humbling to me because I was fortunate early on to have some men early in my studies to prepare for ministry who warned me. Because with ministry, what I don't know how many, some of you do realize this, but for me, one of the biggest challenges, burdens that I carry is that pretty much every waking moment, you are either at the forefront or the back of my mind. Individually, collectively, in groups, what little I know about your stories and what's going on in your life, you're just on my mind. And what drives me is wanting the best for you and being passionate for you and the strength of your life and your relationships and your faith and your journey. It's why I do what I do. But the challenge that comes with that is just like, if I'm awake, it's there, and you're in my dream sometimes, nothing creepy, but it's there too, but it's there. And so it can be very easy to just throw yourself into that. And so I'm passionate about this, but fortunately early on, they warned me, Chad, this is going to be the temptation. You've got to have boundaries. You have to put, God called you to love your wife as God loved the church, as Jesus loved the church, not to love the church as Jesus loved the church. That's his job. You love your wife, you love your family, and then you love the church. And so, and this is, it's like God used yesterday to put an exclamation point on all of this, because we went out down the basement because we finally, all of our four kids, you know, are now again out of the house after the holidays and some other stuff, and we went down to kind of clean up the basement. We started with a footlocker that we haven't opened in like a bazillion years, and we opened like that, and it's like all this, and we found all these old pictures and letters that I wrote her and things we were engaged when we were kids, when we were little fat chubby babies, and like it was a mix of everything. And then we ended up spending pretty much the whole morning going through that, and it was bittersweet. And I think the thing that came out of that for me, again, it was such a mixture of emotions, because through seeing pictures and letters and things, it reminded us of painful times. And it also reminded us of like some amazing times and that we've been blessed. But one of the things that came out of it is I kept seeing these pictures of younger versions of Shauna and I, like, man, I'd love to go back to that. It's just, it goes by so fast. So I'm just telling you, this is fresh on my mind. So please, please hear this message this morning, because I desperately want you to get this right. Because I want you to have as few regrets as possible. I can't say you won't have any, because we all have some regrets. But I want you to get this right. So I'm going to give you something very practical. It's a homework assignment. You should have, I didn't get the extra cards. Everybody should have gotten a card when you came in the room. If you didn't, you can grab one on the way out. But it looks like this. Okay? And so here's what I want you to do. I want you to do this afternoon. Maybe over lunch or right after, but tomorrow at the latest, because here's what I know about you. If you don't do it by tomorrow, you will not do it, and nothing will change. And, you know, by Tuesday, you'll barely like, what did he speak on Sunday? So I'm just telling you, you've got to do this. And if you're married, if you have a close friend or a boyfriend or girlfriend, you live with somebody and you're close to them, you need to talk about this together. If you're a student and you dare, talk about this with your parents. Parents, talk about this with your kids. But here's what I want you to do. The first two things on here, the plus and the minus, the first two things. The plus is I want you to think through, what is something that I need to add to my schedule that's not there? What's something that I need to add to my life that's not there? And the second thing is, what is something that I need to completely eliminate from my life? What is something I need to just remove? So what's something of value that will add to my life that I need to add? Something that, quite honestly, and here's the hard part. Most of you, you're not doing a lot of bad things. You're doing some bad things, but you're not like loading up your schedule necessarily with bad things. It's like good things or fun things or whatever, and that's part of what makes us hard. But go, you know what? This is good, but it's not great. Or this is good, but honestly, it's making these other things suffer. If I could have more time for these other things. So what's one thing I need to add? What's one thing that I need to remove completely? And for some of you, it could be an activity, but for some of you, it needs to be a name. For some of you, it's a series of initials, that there's somebody. And it's like they're a nice person. It's not that they're a bad person. You know, they're a nice person, but you know in your heart that they add such a level of demand to your life and your time and your schedule that they're stealing life from you. And again, it's not that they're bad people. They just take away too much time from your life, and there's nothing to show for it. It may be friends. It may be a weekend thing. Maybe you're a couple, and it's another couple or another couple of couples. You know, again, not that they're bad people. It isn't that God doesn't love them. You know, but in terms of numbering your days, living as if your days are numbered, at least for a season, somebody's got to go. Or it's, again, one of the hundred of things that you've loaded onto your plate. You know, and it's not a bad thing, but it's not priority. It's good, but not great. It's actually negatively affecting everything else. And then on the second two lines is this. What is something that I need to do greater, something I need to turn up or amp up or do a little bit more of in my life? And I don't know what that might be. It may be reading. It might be sleep. You know, I'm getting 4 hours. I need to get 6 hours. You know, it's exercise. I work out one time a year. I need to work out two, whatever. It's something you need to amp up, turn up. And then what's something like I can't necessarily remove it from my life, or I can't or shouldn't, but it's something I need to do less of. And it isn't that you're going to go home and go, okay, that's it. We're throwing away all the TVs. You know, we're selling them all, you know, donating them all. But that's not it. But, you know, just less screen time. Less whatever it is. Maybe it's less social media time. Like, you know, it's not a bad thing. Or maybe for some of you, that's something I need to cut out for a while. It's, you know, maybe it's a hobby. You know, whatever it is. But again, you know, for those of you, you're in a small group, you're in a community group, you know, your relationship, whatever it is, I want you to talk about this. You don't even need a curriculum for this. You just like show up and go, here's what I got. So now's accountability time, and you hold each other accountable, support each other. There's something that has dropped off my schedule, that there wasn't time for it because all these other things crowded out. It's got to come back in. Or there's some, and because of that, something's got to come off. Something's got to come out. There's something that needs to be turned up a little bit. There's something that needs to be turned down a little bit. And again, God, teach me, teach us to number our days that we might gain what we don't have, that we may gain what eludes us, that we might gain what most people never get because they let culture or fear or undefined goals or unworthy goals drive them most, if not all, of their life, that we might gain a heart of wisdom because my time is limited, which means I need to limit what I do with my time. And if you'll begin to live as if your days are numbered and then let that trickle down into every other part of your life, I'm just telling you, it will impact every relationship you have. It'll impact a workplace. It'll impact those that you love the most and your family. It'll mean that you get to come to the end of your life with a life well lived. Let's pray. Father, I pray for all of us because we... Especially, I've been blessed to be in Haiti and Ghana. I've been in third world countries to see where they don't have all the trappings and the distractions that we do, where life is not easy, but it's simpler. And Father, we live in this culture. We're just bombarded with screens and sounds that we need more, we need faster, we've loaded up our schedules. We have underestimated our need for rest and for breathing room, for time alone, for solitude. And so, Father, I pray for each one of us that you help us to answer and identify each of these areas, at least one thing, if not more. And that, Father, that you'll help us, you'll point us to the person that we should share this with so that we have that support and encouragement and accountability that as we come into 2018, Father, that we will come in stronger. And it's in the name of Jesus that I pray. Amen.